Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Michael P. McCarthy. I can't get away from these Irishmen.
Nope, you hired too many of us. Actually, hey, that's what they said back then.
I do have a few paisans working with us. We now have Leo Lavazza, you know, he's a good paisan, you know, and Graham keeps telling me he's half Italian, but, you know, Graham, you and I'm not sure.
He probably just does that for the effect.
I think he just does that to butter up on the boss, you know, so anyway, we're here on an open show, Michael. That means that our listeners are our guests. They get to call in and ask the questions that they think are most important to them, and they can say, you know, this is the question I have, that if you can help me answer this, this will help me tremendously with my personal financial planning. And so, you know, here's my question, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And you know what happens so often, Mike, is we keep saying this and saying this, and then finally at the end of the hour, people say, yeah, I ought to call them. And next thing you know, you got five or six calls, and you got to rush through the calls.
Yep.
So if you call in now, you get the most time, 410-922-6680 is the way to call in. And there's always somebody out there who wants to hear the same question, but is just not the kind of person to call into a radio show. So do them a favor and call in and ask your question and help them out as well as yourself. 410-922-6680. And so, Mike, well, we're waiting for people to call. And I know you always like to plan, you know, and I'm a planner, but I'm not a planner, you know, so I don't plan. And you already know that.
Yep, the shoemaker's shoes. Maybe at least only on the sake of planning for things like a presentation or a radio show. But you really, you know what, I have to break up your plan.
Why is that?
Because we do have a caller, and you'll always want to go to the callers first.
Let's go to the callers, and then I'll talk about what I'm going to talk about.
Well, we don't want to make Keith and Severna Park wait. So, Keith, you have a question on Social Security?
Yes, thanks very much, guys. Appreciate your show always. I just reached full retirement age of 66 and 2, and I had a question. I know in the past Drew's always advocated if you can wait until 70, hold off to get the extra benefits. But I was running some numbers, and I just ballpark, if I were retiring today, I'm entitled to about $3,000 a month, which gives my wife $1,500. If I wait until 70, it's $4,002. So there's a difference each month of about $1,500, which in the 4 years would be over $200,000, and we would have to both survive until 12 years after that in order to recoup what we would have not gotten in the first 4 years. And I'm just wondering, is it because of...
Okay, so Keith, let me address your question, because this is an interesting one. So you made an interesting point there, because it sounds like your wife doesn't have her own Social Security account. She's strictly going to earn Social Security based on your earnings. Is that correct?
She's currently collecting, but the benefit will be higher once I retire.
What's she collecting right now? Is it $1,200, $100, $1,000?
$700, yeah.
$700. So she's going to pop from $700 to $1,500 based on your earnings, right?
Correct.
And both of you in really good health?
Yes.
And I'm assuming you were born in 1954.
55.
I should have known that, because you said 66 and 2 months,
right.
You know? So 55. So both of you are in really good health, and she'll get about an $800 a month increase if she gets it, if you start collecting right now. And you'll get about $1,000 a month increase if you wait to 70, but she will get no more if you wait to 70, right? You're following that, because her benefit is based only on your full retirement age benefit.
But if I just hold off until 70, I would get four. She would get half of that, right?
No. You missed what I said. She's not going to get anything more for you waiting to age 70. She's only going to get half of your full retirement benefit, which you just said a second ago, was about $3,000 a month.
Correct.
Okay. See, so in your situation, you could, and I actually intend to do the same thing. I intend to collect at my full retirement age of 66 and 6 months, because my wife is only getting about $600 or so a month also. And if I don't collect at 66, she's not going to get anything more, and she's going to have to wait another 3.5 years for me to collect. So in your situation, I could make a good argument for you to go in and collect, because your wife is going to collect off of your benefit, and it's going to be substantially more than she's getting on her own account. So I wouldn't disagree with you in your unique situation.
And if I continue to work, I'm still being taxed. No matter what, I'm being taxed on the Social Security.
Here's the negative to your situation if you collect, and that is that you're going to collect, and yeah, you're going to get $3,000 a month, and your wife's going to get an extra $800, but you're going to pay a lot of income taxes on that money. So, you know, that's the negative until you're 70, but I would probably still do it. I intend to do it, and so I don't have any problem with you doing it.
I appreciate your advice.
All right, Keith. Good question. Excellent.
Bye-bye.
Mikey, what do you got going, man?
All right, so we already have their next caller. We're going to have to go to break in a little bit, but let's get started with John in Joppa on health deductions.
Hi. Is that a poem, Mikey?
Hello.
I'm a poet, and I didn't John even know.
John
in Joppa.
Go ahead, John.
Okay. Hey, my wife and I watch our grandkids 5 days a week.
Okay.
Is there any kind of deduction we can take for that?
They still live with their parents full time, right?
Right, right.
And their parents make reasonable income, right?
Right.
Well, then I'm pretty sure we're out of luck on that one.
Yeah, well, I thought so.
Now, here's something, though, I would strongly suggest. It's a little different than what you're calling in about. If you're watching your grandkids on a regular basis while your children are working, I would strongly recommend you learn about temporary guardianship forms. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So it's a form that your son and daughter, or son-in-law and daughter-in-law, or whatever, would sign together and give you a copy of their medical card that says, if my children ever need medical care while under the attention of my parents, they can go to a medical facility and get medical care for them at their direction, even if they can't get in touch with us immediately to get that medical care. You will find this invaluable if you have an emergency and cannot get in touch with your children to get that guardian advice. All right, you want to hold on? I can give you more on that after I come back from this pause.
Okay.
All right, so why don't you hold on? We'll come back and talk more about that temporary guardianship, why it's so important. Mikey, what are we doing?
We are asking everybody to get on the phones and call us, because there's no one after John, and we'll be right back with more money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
One of my favorite bands, Mikey, Steely Dan, right? You know, you like... Oh, we didn't turn that off, did we?
Got it. We're good. So Steely Dan is there, but it is also, we still have lines open. Just a reminder to call 410-922-6680. But I know we want to get back to John and finishing answering his question about having kids of his kids at home.
John, so it's very important that every grandparent out there...
I'm sorry. I got to hang up.
That's okay. We're going to just tell our other listeners, so you go ahead. It's very important that all our grandparents out there, if you ever take care of your grandkids on a regular basis or overnight, or, you know, like I went on a Disney trip with one of my grandchildren about 4 years ago, and it's important to get what's called temporary guardianship. So this is the story. So let's assume one of your grandchildren has a medical emergency while they're with you, okay? So in one of the illustrations I heard about years ago that made me want to make sure all of our grandparents understood this is a grandparent was taking care of a child and the child cut off the tip of his finger. Okay. They called the emergency medical technicians. They came, they got the finger, they applied a tourniquet to the finger to secure it, but they couldn't get in touch with the parents. Okay. Now here's the key. That child was given life-securing help. So in other words, they weren't going to let him bleed to death. But even though they could attach that finger very simply, and he would probably not have lost the use of that tip of the finger, they couldn't connect it until the parent said that you can go ahead and connect it. But if the grandparents would have had temporary guardianship signed by both parents, and even if they're divorced, it still has to be signed by both parents, if they could have presented that to the doctors would have instantly put that fingertip back on the child. And now they did get in touch with the parents, and the parents did give authority, and it was in the nick of time. It was within about an hour or so from when the doctors felt that it would be unable to recover the nerve endings to connect it properly. So temporary guardianship, if you're not familiar with it, learn about it, do a Google search, get that understanding of how it works and so forth. All right, Mikey, what do we got?
All right, well, without further ado, we've got Bill in Essex. Bill, you had a question about retirement?
Yes. I am 70 years old.
I'm 64.
I'm sorry?
I'm 64.
Okay, good.
All right.
I worked since I was 15 years old at the, I don't know, you ever heard of Sinclair?
Yeah, sure. Sinclair Broadcasting or which Sinclair?
No, Sinclair Gas Station.
Yeah, of course, the dinosaur, right?
Yeah, Dino Dinosaur.
Dino the Dinosaur, yeah, absolutely. It was my father's favorite gas station back in the 60s, Sinclair.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, we used drain oil, and you're not going to understand what I'm saying, is that when we opened a can of oil
right,
and put it in your car,
right,
we took the can and put it in a rack, and it drained into bottles.
Wow.
So they were. It was called drain oil.
Wow. And, that's interesting.
When it filled the quart up, we sold it for like a quarter.
Huh. Well, you know, and the fascinating thing is, Bill, is that those cans are probably valuable today. People collect them.
Yep. Well.
Anyway, what's your question?
The point is that because I am 64 and I worked at mediocre jobs, really, today they're not mediocre, but when I was working, they were mediocre.
Okay.
And the thing is that I'm retired. I started at 15, and I stopped at 64 because of medical reasons.
Okay.
The thing is that now I'm only getting 900 and some odd bucks from the federal government for retirement.
Were you ever married?
Yes, I am married.
You're currently married?
Yes.
Was your wife ever working also?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, she was making twice as much money I ever did.
So how much money does she get a month?
Not now. She's not retired at this time. She's at 64, so she won't retire till next year.
Okay. Well, when she retires, you may be able to get extra money based on her earning power.
Well, Mike, question is whether or not the money we do have inheritance and
okay.
We are not spending it or squandering it. So I'm wondering if we could put that money in an account that will help us.
Right. Well, you know, yeah, your inheritance should be using to help you right now. There's no doubt about it. How much is the inheritance? Is it like 50, 100, 500, a million?
No, I would say close to 50.
50. So, you know, there's not a lot that 50 can do for you. Maybe an extra $3,000 a year you can draw from that 50 without, you know, losing it forever. So, you know,
now at this point sitting in the bank, it's not growing at all.
Yeah, well, you got to come up with an idea for it. You know, you got to come up with a strategy as to how to use it. But you definitely, do you have any other monies that you have that you can draw on in the future? I mean, does your wife have a 401k or a 403b?
No.
Okay.
I was a, how would you call it?
An entrepreneur.
An adolescent person in thinking in that way.
Okay, well, you know.
I just blew all my money, had a good time.
Well, you know, that's part of the problem. So, and one thing, you know, there's lots of things you could do, but it's difficult to say without knowing the full situation. I could never get that on this show. So,
I understand.
All right, buddy, but it's a good question. It's an excellent question.
Yeah, because considering you're like, I'm 70 years old, I am limited because of my past salary on how much I can make as a part-time person.
That's not true. You can make an unlimited amount of money once you're 66 years of age.
You're serious?
Absolutely. Since you've been 66, you could have made $1 million a year and it wouldn't have affected your Social Security at all. So you can go out, my friend, and make $50,000 if you can and enjoy life as much as you'd like. All right? Good question.
That sounds like a winner. I'm glad you told me that. Thank you very much.
All right,
much,
buddy.
Sir.
Take care. You know, that's a misunderstanding a lot of people have, Mike. But anyway, let's go to our next caller.
All right. Hal in Wisconsin, you want to talk about health savings accounts?
Hal.
How are you doing?
Great. And you?
I'm here.
Are you really in Wisconsin?
Well, just shortly, I will be a truck driver and listening on the radio or on the live stream.
Were you at Whistling Straight last week watching the Ryder Cup?
No, I was watching it on TV a little bit and flipping back to.
That was a great match, wasn't it? The Americans made us proud. Anyway, go ahead, ask your question now, Hal.
Okay, my wife's going to she has a health savings account.
Okay.
She's going to retire, I think, in maybe June next year.
Okay.
She's not 65 yet.
Okay.
And the college will give her her insurance. It's still a health savings account. Right now she has money taken out of her check.
Right.
After she retires, you know, like 6 months, she won't have it. Can she still actually give to it?
And now, is it a health savings account or is it a flexible spending medical plan?
It's a health savings account.
In a health savings account, Hal, you can hold on to that for the rest of your life and use it anytime you want for medical bills. You just can't contribute to it anymore once you're on Medicare. But you can keep it for the rest of your life and use it whenever you want. You can use it to pay your Medicare Part B premium. You can use it to pay doctor copays. You could use it to buy vision and eyeglasses and dental. You just can't use it to pay for your Medicare supplemental policy. But yes, you can keep that for the rest of your life and use it whenever you have medical bills.
If she still actually, you know, we'll have to write a check for it or whatever to put into it.
No, you can't put into it anymore after she is on Medicare. So if she doesn't go on Medicare and continues to work, then she can continue to contribute to it beyond age 65. But if she goes on Medicare, she's no longer eligible to contribute, but she can always withdraw from what she had accumulated in the plan to that day for the rest of her life and your life.
And as long as she's in a high deductible, qualified high deductible plan.
No, she doesn't, Mike. She doesn't have to be in an HDHP anymore to withdraw from the HSA.
No, I said to contribute.
Oh, to contribute.
That was the last thing you were saying.
She has to be on an HDS. She has to be in a high deductible plan to contribute and not on Medicare. All right. Am I making that clear?
Well, the college actually will give their insurance till she's 65, and then she goes on Medicare or whatever. But she can, don't you know, give. We have to write a check to it instead of taking out her check, because she doesn't get from the college anymore. She can.
Right.
You know,
she can't contribute anymore once she's on Medicare, but she can always withdraw. So I got to take a pause, and if you want to hold on, we'll come back to you. But right now, I got to go on a pause. All right, Hal?
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.
Mikey, where are we going?
We are going to traffic, but before that, the lines are open. So 410-922-6680. If you call in, you're the next caller. We'll be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back, Mikey, with the Wonder Man. So we're going to our callers real quick, right?
Yep, absolutely. We got a number of callers on the line, so let's go directly to Mick in Perry Hall. Mick, you want to talk about ETFs?
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, go.
Hey, last year my company was bought out, and so my former 401k plan is dead now, and I could either roll it over to the new company, transfer to an IRA, and I've decided to manage it myself. I think I'm just dangerous enough, and I'm looking at a series of First Trust ETFs, and maybe you've seen them, but I was curious as to your thoughts on the products. They've introduced these U.S. equity buffer ETFs.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've seen them. Maybe you've seen them.
Yep.
Where they buffer the first 10% of losses.
Right.
Exchange for a cap.
Right.
I'm
familiar with them, and I don't like them. But that's just my opinion. I think they're a waste of money. And if you're going to invest, you don't want anybody doing all that garbage. And there's also a risk that if they do it wrong, they could blow up. So you always have that risk too, because they're using all kinds of derivatives and all kinds of things to buffer this stuff. And so I just don't like them. I mean, I understand, and you might enjoy them and you might like that feeling of security, quote unquote. But I've looked at these products many times, structured CDs and all kinds of things where they buffer it, and the annuities, the index annuities and so forth. But a lot of people are making a lot of money off of people who are afraid of the markets. And so that's why I typically don't use them. What you have to say, Mikey?
Yeah, we're financial people and we're accountants. And like some of the times you get these products and you actually read what your actual, how they're actually going to calculate your gain or your return. And we can't even understand it. They have so many based on this, if that. I mean, it almost makes you feel like maybe the house is always going to win.
And again, you also have to keep in mind that the way they do that is using a lot of, high finance, quote unquote, products and so forth. But it is, like Mikey says, it's the house wins, but you feel secure because you don't have that risk and so forth. So if you like it, Mick, I don't see anything horrible about it, but I personally don't use those types of things. All right.
I appreciate that opinion, and I did see that once you get close to that cap, if you ever get there, then you would have to actively manage that anyway, because what would be the point of still holding if you were at the cap? But I thought with interest rates being so low and potentially on the rise that maybe it could be a replacement for maybe some of the fixed income. But
I understand what you're saying, but you have to keep in mind that everybody thinks interest rates are going to rise, inflation is coming, and so forth. But you could be wrong, and there's a lot of good reasons why you could be wrong. And don't underestimate the power of what technology is about to do to the world over the next 10 years. That's all I got to say. I got to move on, John. Mick, that was a good question.
Thanks, Mick.
What's
all right.
On?
Well, we've still got plenty of callers going, so let's go directly to Rod in Towson. Rod, you had a Roth IRA question?
Yes, I do. I'm 70 years old. I've been retired for 3 years. My only income right now is Social Security and pension because I'm not taking any draw on my 401ks and all that.
Okay.
My wife is 67.
Okay.
She'll be retiring by the end of this year. She will be making about $88,000 $1,000. Now, my question is, can she still contribute to her IRA, her Roth IRA, right?
You both can contribute. As long as one spouse has more than $14,000 of earnings, it counts for both spouses.
Okay. Now, based on that, how much can I put in there?
Seven each. That's the contribution. And remember, your total AGI has to be below $198,000 in order to do that.
Right. So it's $7,000 for each of us?
$7,000 for each of you, as long as one of you has earned income of up to $14,000. And in 2022, if you went and worked at a golf course as a starter and you made $6,000 and that was the only earnings between the two of you, you could, either one of you could contribute up to $6,000, or you could split it 3-3 each or whatever. But it doesn't require both of you to work. It only requires one spouse to work to qualify both spouses for a Roth IRA. All right?
Okay, that's good. Now, are there any catch-up contributions?
Yes, that includes your catch-up. It's $7,000. It's $6,000 for people under 50. It's $7,000 for people over 50. And let me give you one more piece of advice, and I got to run immediately, and that is, because your income is going to take off when you turn 72 with required minimum distributions, you and your wife next year should start seriously considering great tax advice to do Roth conversions. But don't try that without great tax advice. I got to run. Take care. Good question, Rod.
Thanks,
excellent.
Rod. All right. Well, we'll keep on moving through these. We've got Robert and Glenbury. Robert, you wanted to talk about annuities?
Yes, a quick question for you about an annuity. So I was with a company for about 6 years, away from a company for about 6 years. I had a pension plan with them. The way I read it, it looks like an annuity on paper. When I read it, it's on the Fidelity account. When I came back to the company, I talked to a financial advisor, and they said, consider trying to withdraw that money. The company says I can't withdraw the money because I rejoined the company, but I was never notified that I couldn't withdraw the money.
That would be true. So in other words, let's say you worked with XYZ company and they offered you a lump sum or an annuity. You could have taken that when you were no longer employed with them. But once you got reemployed, now you would have been frozen in that account and until you retire again or until they give you an in-service distribution. How old are you?
56.
56. So maybe at 59, you can withdraw it if you want to. But now that you're reemployed with them, if there is a lump sum option, they're not going to let you withdraw it. And they may not even let you withdraw it at 59 and a half. They may require you to terminate service before you're going to do that. But here's one thing that I want to warn you about. Any financial advisor who tells you, see if you can withdraw it, you have to be extremely concerned about what economic bias do they have to try to get you to withdraw that money. It may not have been in your best interest for somebody to have said that to you, and I would bet that it probably was not in your best interest for them to have made that recommendation. And the way you prove that is you look at the analysis of what would have happened if you would have withdrawn that and what would have happened when you come back and you continue those years of service and how much more money you would have when you do leave that company. And I would bet that you're going to have more money by letting it sit there than trying to take it before you came back. All right?
Originally what I want to do is I want to take it out and reinvest it
You're probably going to have more money by leaving it sit there as opposed to, and the growth of that money in that company will probably be better than what it's going to be, what you could do on that money yourself. You may not think so, but I do the analysis quite often. And, there are too many financial advisors who want that lump sum money and take fees and commissions off of it. And that's not the way it should be analyzed. Okay. I understand, but maybe you were right. Maybe it would have been, but that's just a warning I'm giving all our listeners and yourself included. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We got to go to another pause, Mikey. So if there's anybody else online, I think Shelly's online out there, right?
Shelly has already said that she'll wait till be the first caller after the break, but there's nobody after Shelly. So if you have a question that you haven't asked yet, 410-922-6680. But with that, we'll be back with more money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli, the financial consultant, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consultant's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
SG. Got that one right, too.
Of our radio anyway. Time.
Anyway, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Let's go right to Shelley, Mike.
Shelley, in Frederick, you had a question about a family property transfer.
Yeah, I do have a question. My husband and I have two properties, so no mortgages. We're just paying property taxes. And the last couple years, our daughter has been living in one of the properties, and paying the property tax, starting a new family there. And we've just been thinking about what would be the best way, I guess. I don't know, with tax laws and things always changing, I don't know that much about how the gains work on, you know, things like this. But what is
this other house, Shelley, is a second home?
It was a home, a townhome we used to live in. We're in the home now. We just want to retire in the home we're in now.
Okay, so the townhome, what did you do with it when you moved out of it? And did you rent it to somebody years ago?
We've never rented it. We just moved from there to the new home that was...
Recently. You did it recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a property was left to him, and he had to pay taxes on the property, and he had to pay taxes when he first inherited the house.
When you say taxes, you mean property taxes, or you mean inheritance taxes or estate taxes?
I guess I don't know all the details. I know he had to pay money when the house was. I think it was they were basing it on the value of the
transfer taxes.
Mom passed. And
well, they probably had to pay a little bit of transfer taxes.
1.5% if it's in Maryland, I think.
As an inheritance?
Okay. Yeah. And so we're thinking, what is the best way to do the same for our daughter, if we want to leave this other home to her?
If you want to leave it to her, or you want to give it to her, do you want to sell it to her?
We want to go ahead and let her take it. Give it to her. Like, should we just put her on the deed, or
well, she's married though, right?
She is not married. No, they're not married, but they are having a child. She has with her partner.
Uh-huh. Well, then if she's not married, don't ever put that partner's name on the deed with her. Okay. You always want to, if you give her the property, it should only ever be in her name. Don't let her ever put it jointly into somebody's name who she's not married to. And even if she does get married, she should be careful about putting it into joint name. And what are you and your husband worth? Are you worth $500,000, $5 million, $50
million? That's about $500,000 with our, and we both have pretty good retirement plans with our jobs. We're going to be working.
If you and your husband are worth about $500,000, you can easily give that house to your daughter. Is there a mortgage on that house?
No.
So you can easily give that. You can easily give that to your daughter, and you know, if you want to, you could ask your accountant when you do your tax return to file what's called a gift tax return. It's just a legal form you have to say to the IRS that you gave your daughter the property, but it has no dollar impact to your daughter or to you. It's just a filing requirement. It's a big misnomer that if you give your children more than $15,000, some big income tax boogeyman hits you and beats you over the head. It's nothing true to that. It really has to do with what you and your husband are worth, the one who gives the asset to their children. If you're worth a lot of money, $10, $15, $20 million, you got a problem. If you're worth $500,000 like you two are, you can pretty much just give that to your daughter. And if you want to do the gift tax filing as sort of the law requires, then you can do it. It shouldn't cost you hardly anything to do it. And your gift goes to your daughter and you guys live happily ever after.
Oh, that's great to know. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
No problem. Good question. Do you have something, Mike, you wanted to add to that?
For the rest of the callers, or if she's still listening, that, you know, I believe there are some exemptions to paying the transfer tax. I don't know what they are. I think largely it goes around what the relationship is, if it's a linear relationship or a non-linear relationship in an inheritance. But
I think it's not going to be a lot, even if it is. If my parents gave me a house and it only cost me like $2,000-$3,000, I'd be quite happy, Mike.
Absolutely. But without further ado, Joe in Bel Air. Joe, you had a question about RMDs.
Hi there. I'm a 75 retired single man, and I got a RMD about $11,500 I got to take out. I was wondering if there's any way I could any of that tax deferred or
No, you can't. But do you are you charitably minded? Do you ever give money to a church or to a research or anything of that sort?
Well, the blind school.
How much do you give a year?
No, I say I've been thinking about giving to the blind school.
Well, you can always give your required minimum distribution or any portion of it. So if you're getting $11,000, you could give the blind school $1,000 and only pay taxes on $10. That's called a qualified charitable distribution, QCD, from your IRA. And the way you do it is you call up your custodian of your IRA and you say, I want a check made out to the blind school for $1,000 in my example, and they'll send you a check made out to the school. You then give it to the school. You still got to get a charitable receipt. And now when you do your tax return, you tell your accountant or you tell yourself, I gave $1,000 to charity. I don't have to pay taxes on $11,000. I only pay taxes on $10,000. It's called a QCD. Very important that everyone taking RMDs understands this principle and executes upon it if you're charitably minded.
Yeah, I heard you talk about the Roth conversion.
Roth conversion is a good thing, but it's not going to stop you from taking RMDs, and you cannot convert. You cannot convert RMD money to a Roth IRA.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yep. That's a no-no. You can't take your $11,000. It's got to come out, and only one thing you can do is the QCD. All right. I got to run and get my last caller.
All right. And Craig in Westminster, you had a capital gains and charitable donations question?
Yes. Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah. What's up?
I have four cemetery plots I bought for $1,000 each 30 years ago. I want to donate those to a charity that worth $16,000 now.
Okay.
Do I have to pay capital gains, or can I take the whole $16,000 as a charitable donation?
As long as you can prove with some form of appraisal or something like that from the cemetery that the going rate for those lots are $4,000 a pop, then you can take a deduction for the full $16,000. But you are going to need, because of the value of the gift to charity, you are going to need to attach some legal representation of an appraisal on that donation. So be very careful about that. Listen and read the instructions and the rules to Form 5829. 5829, right?
I don't know off the hand.
5829, I think it is, or 6829, one of them. It's the non-cash charitable donations of $5,000 or more. There's an appraisal requirement that has to be attached, And if the charity sells those lots immediately after they receive them, then you'll be able to attach their document to say this is how much they got for those, and that would remove the appraisal requirement, but you would still have to attach that document that says this is how much they got for the sale of the lots. Yes, absolutely. Great strategy if you decide to do it.
Right. So just a statement from the cemetery that they're worth $16,000.
Not from the cemetery, from the charity, if the charity sells them, okay?
Right. Okay.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Chris is letting us know.
Chris is letting us know that we're finished. That's a great strategy he's talking about, Mike.
Yep, absolutely.
I have to run, Mike. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
What I'd like to do to you, jolly people you love with love, show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.